Well, good morning. You're listening to the Marketplace Witness Show, and this is John Beaner, and I'm very excited to be in the offices of John B. Learning his story. This is a treat. If you've not heard the story of Wounded Warrior Project, I have the man who was the founder and God used to pull it all together, and it's an inspiring story. Again, we're Wise Counsel. You can reach us at AskWiseCounsel.com, AskWiseCounsel.com. So, John, welcome to Marketplace Witness. Thank you for sharing with us this morning.
John, thank you. It's a blessing to be on your show.
Well, thank you. Tell us a little bit about your early childhood. You weren't raised in this area of North Florida, so you came from, was it Maryland? Is that where you?
And now I actually grew up in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, but I got here as quick as I could.
Okay, good.
my parents are native Rhode Islanders. Born in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, the home of the Pawtucket Red Sox. Triple A. Yeah, exactly. And then in fourth grade, we moved to a little town called Seekonk, Massachusetts, right on the border of Rhode Island and Massachusetts.
Okay.
For people who don't know that area, it's close to Cape Cod and Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh, really?
So
okay. How about
very much kind of beach community, uh-huh. like Jacksonville.
Yeah. That's a great place to be in the summertime, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I've been up there a few times. Yeah. Well, what about then? How did you went to school in Maryland, right?
I did.
Yeah, I mean, your parents still live up there in Rhode Island or what?
No, my parents are in North Carolina now. It's interesting. My dad was a butcher.
Really? How about that?
Yeah, my dad actually went in the Army when he turned 18.
Okay.
And went in the Army Reserve, was called to active duty during Vietnam in 1968.
Okay.
He had gotten tired of being pushed around by some officers, and so he decided to become one himself and became a lieutenant. And he went through OCS and became a lieutenant. To make a very long story short, he was activated for the war in Vietnam. He got out in 1971.
Okay.
We moved back to Rhode Island, and he returned to his profession as a meat cutter.
Okay.
And then managing grocery stores until 1982.
Uh-huh.
When I was a junior in high school, and the Army came calling again in 82, and they were looking for. My dad by then was a major promotable to lieutenant colonel.
Okay.
They were looking for an officer with his skill set, and they asked him if he'd be interested in coming back onto active duty.
Huh.
He was probably 39 or 40 at that time, which is kind of an interesting time to go back in the service. So we moved to Reston, Virginia, my dad went to work at one of those buildings outside of the Pentagon and made almost another 20-year career of the Army. But that brought me to Virginia. I was raised a Catholic, and I did my first year of college at Belmont Abbey College in Belmont, North Carolina, with Benedictine monks.
Okay, how about that?
My dad thought that might straighten me out a little bit, and what he didn't
wild side
yeah, what he didn't figure was that everybody else's dad thought that would straighten them out too. So we had 900 kids who needed to be straightened out in the same school.
Oh,
and
really?
that didn't necessarily work out too well. So I did 1 year there with the Benedictine monks, and then I went to Towson University in Baltimore. I transferred there to be closer to home and
that's good.
Get my act straight.
Okay, good.
So,
and then you went right straight into the military after that, or
I did when I got out of school.
Dad was still in the military then, probably.
He was. Yeah. He was. As a matter of fact, I have two brothers who today are very proud. Are both FBI agents, but were both former Army officers.
How about that?
And they at one time, my mom had four sons in uniform. Three of us jumped out of airplanes, and so she had to go through, you know, airborne school and ranger school, and I think my mom had the tougher job out of all of us.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, went in the Marine Corps and served with 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, and 1st Reconnaissance Battalion. Fortunate enough to serve a tour of duty as a general's driver. I actually was the driver for General Peter Pace, who became the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Really? Wow.
I drove for General Pace in Somalia, and he had a huge impact on my life.
Wow.
So it was.
Yeah.
It was, and certainly probably would still be serving if if I didn't have a terrible accident in 1992.
Okay.
So.
Well, did you fly helicopters? Were you the pilot, or how did that work?
No, I was an infantryman,
okay.
and I was returning in the back of a helicopter with 14 other Marines and four crew from a mission over the coast of Somalia, the Red Sea.
What year was this again?
This is 1992, March 29th of 1992. So it's actually been, well, I don't know, I think somewhere around 19 years since that happened. And so we were going to fast rope, which is you throw a rope out the back of a helicopter and you essentially slide down it like a fire pole, right onto the ship deck.
Okay.
And as we were coming back to the ship, we were 15, 20 miles out. You could actually see the ship, but the helicopter exploded in midair. It had a massive mechanical malfunction. It blew up in midair, caught fire, and crashed into the Red Sea.
Wow.
Unfortunately, John, it killed four of my fellow Marines and it injured 14 of us. I was severely injured. I was burned over about 20% of my body and lost some serious lung function that day. And I just had some other injuries as well, and I was evacuated back to the United States over the course of 2 weeks. And I rehabilitated in Brooke Army Medical Center, where many of the burn patients are coming back and being treated. That's in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, is it? Okay. So that must be a tough experience then. I mean, you must have been complaining to God, yelling at him, or what are the things that happened during that time?
It was interesting. I had one of those moments. We were about 25, 30 feet underwater, and I did not think that I was going to get out.
Sure.
Like I said, four guys did not get out and ended up perishing. To make a very long story short, I said to God, what a shame that this is how it's going to end.
Yeah.
I had a ring that was on the safe on the USS Duluth that I had bought for my wife while we were out on deployment overseas, for not my wife, but my girlfriend, who I was hoping would accept it and become my wife. And so I felt like I had so much ahead of me, and in so many respects, I was just disappointed that was how it was going to end.
Sure.
And I said, God, I'm going to try one more time to find my way out of this helicopter, and if it's your will, I will. And at that time, I felt a pole that ran across the side of the aircraft, and I knew where that pole was in relation to the doors.
Okay.
And I just went hand over hand down that pole, swimming, and I knew on either end of that pole there was a door. There was either the back door of the helicopter, or there was the side door.
Okay.
And I happened to find the side door and pull myself out.
Wow.
And
now this is while the helicopter's underwater?
This is underwater. It's probably 30, 40 feet underwater.
Wow.
Yeah. So, So I don't want to say I was angry with God. I don't think I was ever angry with God. It was incredibly traumatic.
Yeah.
I think every human emotion, I was on fire.
Sure.
I lost my friends. We were falling.
Yeah.
There was an explosion. I was injured. All the bad things that can happen.
Right.
And then, not to make the story more dramatic, but then there were sharks in the water in the Red Sea. So it was horrifying, to say the least.
Absolutely. I can imagine
and,
that.
It bothered me for a lot of years.
Of course, yeah.
So
anyway, you were able to get up and onto the ship somehow, and then you got back to the States, and you said San Antonio, you were in the hospital there to recover.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And what was that experience like?
Well, short. I actually, by the time they got me back to the States, I was feeling pretty good, believe it or not. I stopped in four or five different hospitals. And that's kind of where the Wounded Warrior Project kind of got its start as I was flying back across the world. I'll just relate two very quick stories. I was in a hospital in Bahrain in, I guess that's the United Arab Emirates, or it's a separate country today, but sitting in a hospital bed, and I was a little bit drugged out. They had given me some Demerol or something for the pain, but CNN World News came on in my room. Some nurses, they were Indian descent. They had come in my room and checked on me, and they asked me if I wanted a TV on, so they turned the TV on. And within 10 or 15 minutes, they reported on the helicopter crash that I was in the day before.
Really?
And they said, it was a very quick news report. It said, four Marines perish and 14 are injured off the coast of Somalia. The Marines report, you know, have not reported the identities of the four missing Marines yet. More to come. And I said, you know, I know these men. And they got a blip on the evening news. Yeah. Each of them had children. And it impacted me greatly.
Sure.
And I vowed then that I would always tell their story.
Okay.
And that would be part of my life's work, was to tell the story of these four men and talk about the sacrifice that's made by Marines and sailors and soldiers and airmen around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when God gave me the opportunity, I knew I had to do something.
Yeah.
So.
So you said there was two things that influenced you.
Yeah. So the other piece of it was I didn't have any of my own stuff.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
They cut my clothes off.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have a razor. I didn't have a toothpaste. I didn't have anything of my own. And it wasn't until I got to Germany that I actually got toothpaste and a toothbrush and a set of boxer shorts and the stuff that kind of made me feel human again.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, I remembered that as well. That was something that my brothers came to visit me in the hospital in Dover, Delaware. That was the first stop when we got in the United States.
Before you went down to San Antonio.
Exactly. Yeah, they pulled into Dover, Delaware, and my brothers came to see me in the hospital, and they brought me some clothes and some things that I, you know, shaving gear and those kind of things.
Personal things.
Yeah, and it felt great. You know, it was just great to get something on that was mine and to see them. And so in 2002, I related to you earlier that I got out of the Marine Corps in 95, and I started to work with veterans as a veterans advocate in 96. In 2002, I was watching a very similar report on TV, and veterans were being wounded, or military men were being wounded and being put into a helicopter. And it impacted me greatly watching it on the evening news. And I said, you know, those guys are going to go through the same thing that I went through, and I had a lot of emotion about it. And I called my brother on the phone, my brother Jim, who's the middle brother, I'm the oldest, and I said, Jimmy, you know, we ought to do something. You know, I know what that's like. And together we came up with the idea of the Wounded Warrior Project. And Jim's a great idea guy. He's in the FBI, and he can't do anything else. He can't go out and raise money. He can't do those kind of things.
Okay.
The government frowns on that. But I took that idea that we came up with together and put action into it. And we started to raise a little bit of money. And you know, and when we got $5,000, I built 50 backpacks full of underwear and socks and calling cards and, at the time, CD players, because they were still, this is before the iPod days, and you know, toothpaste, toothbrush, razors, all the kind of things that you'd want to have to make you feel whole again. I delivered those to Walter Reed Army Hospital and to Bethesda Naval, drove them up in my minivan, and started visiting veterans and talking to them about the future and trying to share a little bit of my testimony and experience, strength, hope. And 2 days later, I got a call from Walter Reed asking me if I could bring him some more. And so I started scrambling, and that's really the start of the Wounded Warrior Project.
Really?
And, you know, today, through the grace of God, through a lot of sacrifice made by personal donors around this country and just good folks volunteering their time, that organization has grown to be a $50 million nonprofit that
amazing
has raised...
story.
Yeah,
amazing.
Done very well.
How did you get to Jacksonville? Because... that was unique. Were you in Virginia at the time? I mean, the story was that you started in Roanoke, is that right?
Yeah, I was living in Roanoke. I was actually working in the federal building, the PAW Federal Building in Roanoke, Virginia, which is famous for one thing. That's the building that Larry Flint and Jerry Falwell had the court case in about Larry Flint being a pornographer.
Oh, really?
No. And that's the actual courthouse. That's what that, the federal building in Roanoke, pretty interesting. It's the only thing it's famous for, but I worked in that building for about 7 years. And long story short, I love to play golf. I hate shoveling snow.
Okay.
And I was the CEO of the Wounded Warrior at the time. Uh-huh. I was having some trouble getting the kind of employees that I needed with the relevant experience in the nonprofit sector.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at three different cities and felt like this was the right place to bring my family and to move the project to.
Okay.
Yeah, big time military town. Dan, gosh, I'm just lost his name for a second. The guy who ran the Department of Veterans Affairs here in Jacksonville, committed Christian and a good man. He called me and asked me to come here to town and that they would support
Really?
They would support our organization.
Wow, that's
and,
great.
And then a guy named Mike Heisey, who's my landlord here.
This time when you had formed a nonprofit, but you really, did you have anybody being paid to help, or did you have any budget or anything?
I had four or five people that were working for me at the
good?
Time. And,
okay.
Yeah, now we had grown to about a $5 million a year nonprofit, but it really flourished here in Jacksonville.
Okay. What kind of support did you get? I mean, who were the people, some of the early people that said, hey, we want to help this thing? I mean, beyond, let me give you $5, let me give you $100 or whatever. What? I guess you got support from the Veterans Administration a bit and the military, but yet you didn't, did you take federal money? Or
we didn't. It was part of, when I started the project, I felt as though these are America's troops and that the federal government had a job to do, but it wasn't necessarily the job of hometowns and communities across the country. And I felt as though the best people to support our veterans were the people that lived in communities across the country. And so we solicited, you know, initially it was $25 donations that got us to $5 million. It's,
okay, wow.
It's really $25 donations
that's
that got us to $30, $40 million.
Uh-huh.
You know, the big donors, the guys that really brought the money in at the end were guys like Michael Ward, the chairman of CSX here in Jacksonville.
Okay.
Who's a great man, and a guy named Martin Franklin, who was the CEO of Jarden Corporation. You probably wouldn't know who they are, but they own Mr. Coffee, Oster Toasters.
Oh, okay.
They own Coleman Outdoors. Martin, they're in that $1 million donation range. They're,
wow.
they're the companies that really come out and help you get to the next level.
That's great.
Yeah, no, we had some great early donors, and I did remember, and if he hears this, I apologize so much. Dan McCarthy is the guy who ran the Department of Veterans Affairs here in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And today,
I just want to encourage you to come here.
He is. He's a great Christian man. He's a guy. He works for Angela Corey now at in Jacksonville. Who's the attorney, state's attorney here in Jacksonville? He's the deputy. Dan was instrumental. A guy named Mike Heisey, who runs Liberty Property Trust here in Jacksonville.
Sure.
Mike's son was in combat, and one of the guys that I helped early on that was wounded and blinded served with Mike's son in the Rangers, John Heisey. They're from here in Jacksonville, from Ponte Vedra. And when Mike heard we were coming, he called and offered very, very discounted office space when we came to town. So God prepared the way for us here in Jackson. It's been a great experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many veterans do you try to serve? What is the rate of soldiers coming back? And
well, you know, it's been almost 45,000 that have been wounded in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
Wow, 45,000.
It's a big number. You know,
it is a big number.
You know, about 6,000 have been killed. You know, so you can't put a finger on how many folks are suffering from, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury as a result of explosions. So much happened in this conflict that was different than other conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Survivability rate was much higher for people that had been severely, you know, wounded. And so this population had different needs. You know, the whole American experience today is different. It takes a lot more money to live in this country than it did after World War II and after Vietnam.
Of course,
You know, 100% disability check in America today is only $2,400 a month.
Okay.
You know, a guy can almost not live on $2,400 a month, especially if he has a wife and children.
That's right, as a family man, yeah.
So just the pure economics of it, you know, there's a lot more that needed to be done to ensure that a veteran could survive, not just emotionally, but financially and physically.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, you must have gotten some pretty strong media coverage in the early days, too, did you or not? Well, how did that...
Well, yeah, we did. I was very fortunate, and Tony Snow... The late Tony Snow from Fox News became a friend through a phone call, very much like your phone call to me, John.
Really?
I said, I want to introduce myself. My name's Tony Snow, and I have a little radio show in Washington, D.C., and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the Wounded Warrior Project.
Okay.
And Tony and I became fast friends. And unfortunately, 2 years later, he passed.
Yeah, he passed away.
After
some kind of cancer.
He did. He had colon cancer. But, of course, before that, he became the spokesman to the president at the White House, and
that's right.
Just a great man.
Yeah.
And Tony gave us a lot of national profile, and then when Tony knew he was going to die, he went to Bill O'Reilly and asked Bill to continue his efforts to help the Wounded Warrior Project, and then of course O'Reilly's been a huge advocate for our cause.
Okay, that's great.
So
Well, there's been other people too, haven't there been concerts and all this kind of thing that's going on?
Sure. I mean, there's, to be honest with you, there's been thousands of events since since the beginning of Wounded Warrior Project. Mm-hmm. And really, I'll give you an example. Steve Spurrier, the former Gators coach, and the locals will appreciate this. South Carolina wears Under Armour football gear, and Under Armour is a large sponsor. And so every year, two Under Armour schools play, and they wear Wounded Warrior Project logos. And if people watch Steve Spurrier walk the sidelines, he has a South Carolina Gamecocks visor with the Wounded Warrior logo on it, and all the players had Wounded Warrior uniforms. So some really neat public exposure things have been done, and we put a very good public relations plan in place almost from the very outset.
Yeah.
So,
can you kind of draw us back to some of the men or women that you've met, you know, that came back and had a tremendous adjustment in their life, maybe, or a significant adjustment that said, wow, and they either thanked you or you really had a chance to personally be connected with them, or some examples of...
There's hundreds and thousands of examples of people that my family and I have come to know and love. Many right here in Jacksonville is a young man named Dan Nevins, who I delivered a backpack to in the hospital. And Dan today works for the Wounded Warrior Project. He's an executive vice president over there at WWP. And Dan's an interesting story. Was a salesman for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, graduated from college at Sonoma State in California. And Dan got recalled to active duty. He was a staff sergeant in the reserves, helped him pay through college, and got activated and was running down a road in Iraq, and his vehicle was hit by an improvised explosive device, and he lost a leg. And his other leg was badly injured, mangled, really. And started working with Dan really early on, and just knew he was a special guy. Dan was fortunate enough through relationships and through some of the work that we were doing at the Wounded Warrior Project to get a job here in Ponte Vedra with the PGA Tour.
Oh, really? Wow.
Worked for the PGA Tour for about a year and a half, and during the course of that time, really struggled with the leg that was mangled and had constant pain, and was with Dan one afternoon, and he was in a lot of pain, and he called me up that evening and said that he was going back into the hospital and that he just couldn't stand the pain anymore. Ended up having a terrible infection in the other leg. Doctors told him that you know, this could be something that was constant, and gave Dan the option to keep the leg or to remove it. And Dan bravely, courageously, had the other leg removed. Dan is a great Christian man. He just had his second child, Carly, who happens to be my goddaughter.
Oh boy! Wow.
And Dan beats me consistently on the golf course. I shoot in the mid-80s, and I watched Dan shoot 74 with two prosthetic legs.
Wow.
And he's just a wonderful guy. So that's a
fantastic story.
That's a guy right here in Jacksonville who everybody can meet and, you know,
well, be inspired. I heard someone mention a guy named John Roberts. Now,
John Roberts.
Who is he, and what's his story? Was he on the helicopter with you or something?
John was my sergeant. Was on the helicopter that I was in, and John was the most badly injured in the helicopter that I was in. John was burned over 85% of his body.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's terrible. I sat on the. I tell John this often. When they evacuated John and I, I saw him on the. They had brought us into the galley. They turned the galley into a trauma unit on a ship.
Wow.
And they brought us into the dining room in the galley, and John was laid on a table right next to me, was screaming in horrible pain, and his arm was hanging off, and he was burned over 85% of his body, and I knew that that was the last time I was going to see John Roberts for sure. And John lived, and he never came back to the Marine Corps, and I ended up staying on duty, as you know, for three more years, and lost contact, you know, for a number of reasons, not the least of which is John just wasn't ready to be social for a while. But in 97, I tracked John down and got him his first job working with vets.
Okay.
And he became a veterans advocate like I was for another organization. Then went on to work for the Department of Veterans Affairs in Houston. And then about 2003, 2004, I needed to bring on a national service director. I'll go back to the early days. There was a young man here in town who many people have met, a guy named Ian Lennon, who was also badly injured and burned in this conflict. And John was working for the Department of Veterans Affairs in Houston. And I got a call to go visit Ian. And I found out how badly injured he was. He was much more burned than I was. Sure. And he was disfigured. And I said, I'm not the right guy, but I know the right guy. Okay. And so I called my good friend John Roberts and I said, do me a favor. I need you to go to Long Island, New York, to this rehab hospital, burn center, and go see this young man. And John, to his credit, said, absolutely. And through the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Tony Principi at the time, they got John a ticket. They flew him to Long Island. This young man would see no one but his own mother and his sister. And the nurses and doctors that were working with him. He would take no other visitors. John went in and visited him on a Monday. By Monday the following week, he was at Yankee Stadium on center field, in the middle of the infield, being honored by the people in New York. Wow. And John was with him.
How about that?
So we got him out.
Pretty
of the inspiring. Yeah, and that's great. Got him out of the hospital. And so John came to work for Wounded Warrior Project, and today is their national service director.
Wow.
Still lives in Houston.
Fantastic,
yep.
Man.
And so, great guy.
I'm sure there's a lot of great stories like that. Again, it's been an honor to share with you. So you left Wounded Warrior then about, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, and started your own company.
Yeah.
In logistics and transportation and procurement, and you're enjoying that business and having that grow, and it's pretty exciting. Right here in Jacksonville stuff.
It is, and you know, I would be remiss though, John. It is the wise, you know, it is wise counsel, and you know, if I didn't say that, you know, a lot of the stuff that I did was inspired by God. I was nothing more than an open vessel to God's will, and I am not special in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
God inspired me to do something. He gave me the tools to do it.
Right.
For many reasons, I don't know why he gave me these particular tools. Matter of fact, most of my life, I didn't know why I had these tools because they didn't really equate to anything good until he put Wounded Warrior Project in my way, and I answered his call. So I give the glory for anything that's happened to me in my life to Jesus Christ.
Praise God.
Everything that I have today, I owe to him and his inspiration in my life.
Yeah.
When I've tried to do it on my own, John, and you probably hear this all the time from your guests, when I tried to do it on my own, I didn't get many places. I didn't get anywhere really. Yeah. When I turned this business over to God and I told, you know, I asked God to come into my life and to bring Christian men and women into my company that would be an inspiration, he did. And I can tell you, and I related this to you earlier, the first 90 days in this business, the last 90 days in this business have been miraculous. As soon as I asked God for his favor and for his blessings in my business, they were delivered. And
that's
so if that's a testimony,
that's
hope that inspires somebody else.
Again, this is John Beener, and I've been talking to John Media, who is the president of Goverline, but the founder of Wounded Warrior Project, which is headquartered here in Jacksonville. And so, John, again, it's an honor to talk with you, and we really appreciate you sharing the time and the experiences with us. So God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Again, John Beener with Marketplace Witness Show. If you want to reach us at AskWiseCounsel.com, that's a good place to do it, AskWiseCounsel.com. Till next Saturday, we'll see you then.